This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Wild Places, which is currently the center of a national energy debate. Through stunning footage and in-depth interviews, this entertaining film links seemingly unrelated matters such as energy independence, global warming, Native American rights, wildlife, and wildlands protection. The event is free and open to the public. For more information, visit clean at www.cleanhouston.com. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
And Jennifer and I.
Brian with a Y.
Brian with an I.
And on tonight's show, the Texas primary vote. For the Democrats, it was a deciding draw. Okay, so now what? We'll discuss that. Bringing in the Green, a traditional Irish festival and annual fundraiser for the Montrose Counseling Center. Sally Huffer, Mary Urban, Community Projects Specialist for MCC, will be here to discuss that, along with John Danielson, the host of the party. The Houston Buyers Club, well, I guess they'll be on next week, right? The Houston AIDS Walk was this past weekend. Yesterday, in fact, Gary Greer will join us, suntanned and well-walked. And we'll have our regular features from this way out, including News Wrap, and Joan Devlin is going to be along in the second hour with something, not sure quite what. And it looks like we had fundraising the past couple of weeks. Do you know how we did on that?
Well, according to what's up here on the wall, $306,336, 102% of the goal.
Congratulations to everyone that contributed.
Yes, 2,354 pledges, 649 new members. You need to know any more? How many of those people actually paid?
Yeah,
well,
really.
We don't know yet.
Yeah, okay. Still to be determined. All right. Well, yes, if you did pledge, please be sure to honor that pledge by doing whatever it was you said you were going to do. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah, and here's News Wrap.
I'm Donna Ann Ward.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 8, 2008. Gay and lesbian refugees seeking asylum in countries safer than their homelands have increasingly been in the news. An Iranian lesbian who fled to Britain after her girlfriend was arrested and sentenced to death faces deportation after losing the latest round this week in her battle to be granted asylum. 40-year-old Pegah Imambakhsh came to the UK in 2005, soon after her partner was arrested by Tehran police. Iranian queer rights groups have reported that she is in custody under sentence of death by stoning. That case follows growing public outcry over the plight of a gay Iranian teenager who fears execution if he's deported. 19-year-old Mehdi Kazemi came to London to study English in 2004, but later discovered that his boyfriend had been arrested by the Iranian police, charged with sodomy, and hanged, but not before giving Kazemi's name to authorities during what was probably harsh interrogation. Kazemi fled to the Netherlands after the British Home Office refused him asylum last year. Dutch judges will decide this month whether, under European Union treaties, he should be returned to Britain. In rejecting both asylum applications, the British Home Office said that Iranian gays and lesbians aren't persecuted if they're discreet about their homosexuality. A rationale first put forth, then reversed by Dutch authorities dealing with Iranian refugee cases. International protests are calling for a similar moratorium in Britain on the deportation of Iranian gay and lesbian asylum seekers.
A gay Malaysian man was to have been deported from Canada this week after being refused refugee status. At last report, he was still asking the federal government to intervene. Kolantiran Amir Talangan made a last-ditch appeal to Immigration Minister Dianne Finley this week, asking her to stay the March 6th deportation order. Homosexuality is a crime in Malaysia, punishable by up to 20 years in jail. Kulin, as he's known to his friends, says that he fears for his life if he's sent back to Kuala Lumpur. He said Malaysian police detained him for 5 days and verbally and sexually abused him. but he lost his refugee status case because the Canadian immigration judge was not convinced he's gay. The Malaysia coordinator for Amnesty International Canada, Margaret John, told reporters that it's not clear whether Kulin's life is at risk, but certainly his right to freedom of expression is at risk, she said. He may be charged with being a homosexual, he may be fined, he may be imprisoned.
And we've reported in recent weeks on the cases of two gay Jamaican refugees also seeking asylum in Canada. Homosexual acts are punishable by up to 10 years in prison at hard labor in Jamaica. And political, church, and cultural homophobia have made life increasingly dangerous for the island's LGBT people. International activists have recently suggested a tourist boycott to prod the government of the Caribbean nation into improving conditions for gays and lesbians. But JFLAG, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, that country's LGBT rights group, has cautioned against such a boycott. In a statement released this week, the group said that, "In our battle to win hearts and minds, we do not wish to be perceived as taking food off the plate of those who are already impoverished. In fact, members of our own community could be disproportionately affected by a worsened economic situation brought about by a tourist ban." The group said it appreciated international support and sought constructive interventions that both make our case for human rights protection and minimize risk to our physical and material well-being.
A leading queer activist group in the Ukraine is appealing for international support in the face of new attacks on LGBT rights. Formerly a part of the Soviet Union, the Ukraine decriminalized homosexuality and established an equal age of consent in 1991. But the socially conservative country has no specific protections for LGBT minorities and is politically dominated by an affiliate of the Russian Orthodox Church. A parliamentary committee this week urged the state to take steps to fight homosexualism, lesbianism, and other sexual perversions which do not correspond to moral principles of a society. MPs from the governing party have charged that propaganda and expansion of homosexuality in the country form a threat to national security, contradict national interests, and undermine the authority of rights and freedoms of human beings and family. A statement issued this week by Nash Mir, the country's LGBT rights group, said that in their opinion, freedom of speech and human rights belong only to the heterosexual majority of the population. While the Ukraine continues to seek membership in the European Union, critics have questioned its commitment to human rights.
But Argentina's new president, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, supports the legalization of same-gender marriage, at least according to the president of the National Institute Against Discrimination, Xenophobia, and Racism. Noting the passage of a divorce law under the previous administration, the Buenos Aires newspaper Clarín asked Maria José Lubertino in a February 24th interview, "Will Cristina's accomplishment be gay marriage?" Lubertino responded, "I have no doubt. If they didn't want me to advance this issue, they wouldn't have put me in charge of the Institute."
In U.S. queer couples news, the California Supreme Court held a more than three-hour hearing on March 4th in a challenge to the state's ban on same-gender marriage. Several consolidated cases involve almost two dozen couples from various parts of the state. They were represented by Lambda Legal, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Their attorneys argued that denying gay and lesbian couples the right to marry violates equal protection provisions of the state constitution. Deputy Attorney General Christopher Krueger, representing the state of California, said that the definition of marriage is so deeply ingrained in tradition and law that only the legislature or voters have the power to change it. And attorneys for two conservative groups also opposed to marriage equality addressed the high court, arguing that keeping marriage exclusively heterosexual furthers the state's interest in procreation. They also claimed that California's domestic partnership laws prove that same-gender couples don't face discrimination. Some analysts said that comments and questions by three of the court's seven justices during the hearing suggested that they would uphold the state law defining marriage as exclusively heterosexual, while only one's indicated that lesbi-gay couples should be granted marriage equality. The other three justices asked questions critical of both sides, so the vote could be close. The court has 90 days from the March 4th hearing to issue a ruling.
The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, that state's highest court, struck down laws banning same-gender marriage in 2003. And in 2004, the first gay and lesbian couples began to wed. Since then, more than 10,000 queer couples have married there. And as the only U.S. state to enact marriage equality, Massachusetts is reaping huge financial rewards, according to a report this week in the Boston Business Journal. The state, it said, has become a powerful lure for same-sex couples who want to live in a place where they can get married, gain legal rights, and have access to spousal health benefits.
Washington's Democratic Governor Christine Gregoire is expected to sign new legislation expanding the state's domestic partnership law. It would provide more than 170 additional rights and responsibilities that married couples already have. The legislation had passed in the House and passed the Senate this week on a 29-20 vote. The 200-page bill was sponsored by Senator Ed Murray and Representative Jamie Peterson, both Democrats, and two of five openly gay members of the legislature. The original domestic partner law was enacted after the state Supreme Court in 2006 upheld Washington's so-called Defense of Marriage Act that limits marriage to heterosexual couples. But it said that the legislature could overturn that law or amend it to include same-gender couples. The new legislation makes domestic partnerships equal to marriage in areas of community property, guardianship, and powers of attorney. It would allow people the right to refuse to testify against their same-gender partner in state court. And it provides the same remedies as married couples in ending a relationship, including the division of property. More than 3,200 domestic partnerships have been registered with the state since the law took effect last July. Only three have been dissolved, according to the Secretary of State's office.
And finally, the Associated Press's David Bowder reported this week that the love affair between two young men on the venerable CBS TV soap opera As the World Turns has triggered a protest campaign by angry viewers. But it's not the sort of protest you might expect. Gay fans of the fictional romance between Luke and Noah are upset because the two characters haven't kissed on screen since September. As the World Turns had the first gay male character in daytime drama in 1988. Last August, it featured what is believed to be the first time two gay men kissed on a soap when Luke surprised Noah with a smooch. They kissed again in September, as Noah was still coming to grips with being gay. Fans first sensed a pullback around Christmas during a tender scene where the two men proclaimed their love for one another. It seemed clear that they were about to kiss, but the camera instead panned up to focus on some mistletoe, reminiscent of an infamous never-seen gay male kiss several years ago on the primetime soap opera Melrose Place. Valentine's Day featured fantasy sequences involving several As the World Turns couples. All the stories ended in a kiss, except for Luke and Noah's. They hugged. That's when fans started complaining in a letter-writing campaign and an online petition. There's even a website that counts the days, hours, minutes, and seconds since Luke and Noah last locked lips.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 8th, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Donna Ann Ward.
And I'm Rick Watts.
You deserve me. Sound the alarm. It's an emergency.
And I'd like to send a shout out to J.D. Doyle with thanks for putting together another music compilation for us, so we have fresh music for you on Queer Voices. That was Boyfriends, a song called Situation from their 2007 CD, which was titled In With. This is Queer Voices.
Indigenous LGBTs are organizing internationally like never before. We'll hear about what's happening today after we get some historical perspective.
The revered two-spirited people, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. As early as the 1500s, French fur traders, Catholic missionaries, and British colonists witnessed Native Indian males dressed and working as women. The North American tribes called them two-spirited, a feminine spirit and a masculine spirit existing in the same body. A two-spirited male would take on the gender of a woman, maintaining the physical strength of a man. They were valued as marriage partners and were considered healers, prophets, and keepers of wisdom and spiritual understanding. They were also regarded for their ability to solve problems for both genders, individually or between each other. Unlike European Americans, gender divergence was not a threat to Native cultures. As Sue Beaver, a two-spirited Mohawk, put it, quote, "We look at ourselves as being very gifted. The Creator created special beings when He created two-spirited people." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Tall Feathers.
Are you signed up for our emailed This Way Out updates? We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and dishing some behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show. We also send out weekly email messages describing the specific content of each program. All you have to do to receive one or both of these messages is email tworadio@aol.com. And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will. Again, to receive the occasional This Way Out updates or our weekly program information messages, ask for one or both by name when you email tworadio@aol.com. That's tworadio@aol.com.
When you walk that talk, do you talk about love? When you talk about love, do you walk that talk? There's a man with a woman's touch. You know the girl could be so tough, but we all got blood.
Dig it.
Can you dig it?
You're listening to Walk That Talk by transgender two-spirit musician Georgie Jessup from her CD Woman in a Man's Suit. Georgie is just one of the voices rising up out of a growing movement for pride and support among Native peoples. And artist-activist Richard LaFortune is another. Richard is an Alaskan citizen of the Yupik or Eskimo tribe, but he sits at the center of a cultural and media awareness network for all Native LGBT people. He chats with This Way Out correspondent Dixie Trichel in Minneapolis, Minnesota, about his work with those all too often overlooked communities.
Richard, tell us about the Two-Spirit Press Room.
I received some emails from community members in the Southwest and in Oklahoma. They were alarmed by some of the things going on in their communities. Navajo Nation, the tribal council there, was proposing legislation that would prohibit same-sex marriage. Same thing was happening in Cherokee Nation West in Oklahoma. They happen to be the largest tribes in the United States. They have the largest enrolled population. Cherokee community member emailed me, and I'd been watching these stories, tracking them over a short period of time before this. Two Cherokee women, both enrolled members of their tribe, went to the Cherokee tribal courthouse, got a marriage license, got married. Because they'd been together for 5 years, Don McKinley and her partner, Kathy Reynolds, this made national news, major news markets. One of the things that was happening was there was a lack of comprehension about why this was a big deal. Because, of course, the backdrop of all this is DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and all the neoconservative impulses that were really negatively impacting the whole GLBT communities. Under a sovereign nation, they were able to go to their courthouse, obtain a marriage license legally in the state of Oklahoma, which is a DOMA state. And they became the only legally married same-sex couple in the state, in a sovereign nation. And really, there was nothing that the state of Oklahoma could say, although the state of Oklahoma prohibited same-sex marriages. These women were legally married anyway. Meanwhile, in Arizona, the Navajo tribal government passed what was called the Diné Marriage Act of 2005. So in late May, I got these two emails, literally one day and the next day, and they said, can you help us spread the word and help us think this through? So we convened over the next 3 weeks. I called about 7 or 8 national GLBT service and advocacy organizations, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, the Human Rights Campaign, Gay and Lesbian Alliance for Anti-Defamation, Eagle Herc, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, the Audre Lorde Project in New York, a couple of other organizations, and then we touched base with about 35 or 45 Native GLBT community leaders from here to Hawaii to Alaska to everywhere. I said, we need to talk because we realized that our communities in the last 20 years, partly because of these gatherings, which had been a force for grassroots organizing and reconnecting and healing, it had really produced such dynamic results that our communities had grown geometrically. People were less afraid to be out. People's communities were slowly, in some places, becoming more accepting. And one of the things is that in the mainstream gay community, we realize that, you know, every few years, leadership changes, you have new people, new organizations. A lot of people are arriving at a place of GLBT Natives 101, and they don't know the first thing, you know, about who we are or what our traditions represent. We realized we had to reach out. We didn't have the policy contacts, the kind of media contacts we needed to tell our story. And meanwhile, these sensational stories about same-sex Native, you know, marriages on the reservations or legislation about it were hitting the mainstream news and making big waves. And so we talked about it, and I said one of the things that we really need is to help educate GLBT journalism and mainstream journalism about Native GLBT people, Native cultures in general. Plus, we have to continue our work in providing the tools and mechanisms to our GLBT Native community members what to do when someone puts a microphone in front of your face or a video camera in front of you and says, speak. It can be terrifying, and you don't know what you're going to say. You don't know, you know, what do you? How do you put a press release together? How do we tell news by, for, and about ourselves instead of having possibly inaccurate stories about us told by other people who don't understand, but who are well-intentioned? So that's how Two-Spirit Press Room was born.
Tell us about the 20th International Two-Spirit Gathering.
We're going to be celebrating the 20th anniversary international gathering of GLBT Two-Spirit people. And that will be at the end of August here in Minnesota. And we were selected by the international community partly because we originated those gatherings here in Minnesota, 1988.
Has it been going to a different state?
What we did in 1988, at that time, there weren't a lot of places for Native people, GLBT Native people, to get together outside of the bar scene. That was not a really healthy place, you know, for us to get together if we were focused on healing, which is what we were heading toward. And it was also coinciding with the emerging HIV pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we really wanted to do was focus on cultural revitalization. This was because we had really been talking during that whole previous decade about the fact that our memories were coming back, and we realized that in our ancient cultures, the people who would be called GLBT today, we had always been respected members of the communities. Instead of accepting an identity where our identities could be used as a weapon against us by the larger society, of course, a lot of racism against Native people, and then compounding that homophobia. And so we saw our job as really bringing a positive message to Native communities that were now, for the first time over the previous 20 years, really reclaiming our languages, our cultures, our spiritual traditions, a lot of things that had been squelched over the previous century.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was established through residual funds from the 1987 March on Washington. It was apparently so fabulously successful that there were actually a few dollars left over, and the march organizers assembled community leaders and said, look, we can't keep this money. This belongs to the communities. How shall we, you know, make use of this in
mm-hmm.
the most strategically wise and fair way? So the Minneapolis community proposed that we have a gathering of Native GLBT people. We had people from Australia. We had an Australian lesbian participant, an Aborigine woman. We had people from around the United States and Canada. We've had people from every corner of the Turtle Island over the last 20 years, and we hosted the first two, and then it went up to Winnipeg, it went over to Oregon, up to British Columbia, down to Arizona, Kansas City, New Brunswick, Minneapolis for the 10th, California. It's been all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Calgary, Edmonton, Montana, everywhere. What we've done is kind of alternate over the border so that everybody gets a chance to participate, because sometimes
mm-hmm.
it's hard for people to cross the border, either logistically or financially.
Right.
And so we try to make this as accessible as possible. And it's a time and a place for us to share our cultures with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's by, for, and about Native people, our partners and families. We have a lot of people who are really interested in what we stand for and what our history means. And there are a lot of non-Native people who would love to participate in this, but we don't have a chance to get together by ourselves and celebrate our cultures together. We have a lot of ceremonies. We have powwow. We have ceremonial feasts. We have giveaways. There's a sharing, a redistributing of wealth and symbols of honor and respect and affection.
20th anniversary is going to be up north in Minnesota.
Yes, and so we are going to be possibly the largest event of its kind in North America. The communities every year usually get together at the end of every event. People say, okay, where are we going to be in the years to come? And usually a couple years out ahead of time, we'll say, okay, it's going to be in Minneapolis in 2008, Denver in 2009, and, you know, such and such place in 2010. So it gives people sufficient time to A, plan, and B, fundraise, because you can't do this with no money. We have tremendously poor communities,
mm-hmm.
People living in terrible poverty, and on top of that, discrimination in housing, education, job training, you know, jobs, everything. So the luxury of traveling across continent to no matter how special an event is nearly an impossibility for a lot of people. So what we try to do is raise the funds necessary to assist with transportation, with registration costs, and things like that.
Fabulous.
So we're in the process of doing a major fundraising campaign right now. I think we see light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, that's good.
And we have this fabulous poster that I brought into the studio that I wanted to talk about.
Tell us about it.
The Planning Council proposed to National Endowment of the Arts Fellow Haleatisnagini, who is Navajo and Muscogee Seminole, brilliant photographer known all over the world. And she spent a lot of time in Minneapolis, and many of us know her and love her and her work. And she made this beautiful portrait. It's a montage centered around a historic figure named Wiwa. And Wiwa was the governor of Zuni Pueblo in the 1920s. All the people in Washington, D.C., including people at the White House and all over Congress, wined and dined her all over the city, all the people from the historic, you know, gray book elevated bloodlines of Washington, all the, you know, elite. And they were all saying among themselves, what an extraordinarily tall, handsome woman she is. And of course she wasn't. She wasn't anatomically a woman. She's a figure along with perhaps equally well known as Barchiampe, who is a female, I believe she may have been a chief. She was a Bade of the Crow tribe out west. And so these are a couple of our historic figures, one from the 19th, one from the 20th century, who are well known among our communities. Wiwa, being transgender, of course, is really important because we have a lot of transgender people. Transgender people are often not understood, not respected, not revered in the mainstream gay community. We believe that it was important to bring this powerful figure. She was a head of state before the community and celebrate her memory. This is what we do, and it's how we reconstitute and remember our heritages.
That was Two-Spirit cultural activist Richard LaFortune, director of the Two-Spirit Press Room and the 20th Anniversary International Two-Spirit Gathering, in conversation with Dixie Trichel. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Donna N. Ward, Rick Watts, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Tall Feathers, Sherry Lund and Dixie Trichel contributed program material, Georgie Jessup sang Walk That Talk, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Gay Chemist Support Fund of the Horizons Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from several special CD thank you gifts. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. You can get an email message describing the content of each week's This Way Out by emailing us at tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KXCI Tucson, Arizona, CFRC Kingston, Ontario, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Who you are.
Coming up next, we have the two Bryans, Jennifer and Sally Huffer. And it's funny, during that last song, the two Bryans were talking back and forth amongst each other about who's more punk. That was Standing in the Way of Control, the title track from their 2005 CD, The Gossip. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
Brian with Y.
Brian with an I.
And we're here with Sally Huffer from the Montrose Counseling Center.
She's the diva from the Montrose Counseling
Center. The diva from the
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, please.
Oh, come on. You're the Montrose Counseling Center diva.
Well, if you said so, not me. I prefer community project specialist.
All right. Well, we have a community project going on. What
we
is
have
this
an event coming up.
Oh,
yeah,
my talk
gosh.
About it.
Well, for those of you who are proud of their Irish heritage, and for those of you who are not, we have our annual St. Patrick's Day celebration coming up, and it's going to be on this coming Friday at the home of John Danielson. It's called Bringin' in the Green. And it's after work, so it's from 5:30 to 8:30, so it doesn't go too terribly late at night.
That's
and
good.
We do this every year.
And how long has it been going on?
Well, this is the 19th time that we've had Bringing in the Green. We skipped over a year in 2006, but due to popular demand, it is back. Thank you to Butch and Andy. Like I said, because of popular demand, it came back last year, and so we're having it again this year, too.
And the funds go to what now? Is it for special projects or for just...
This year, yes.
Okay, what are they?
This year, all of the income that's raised through Bringing in the Green will go directly to our building fund.
Oh, yes.
And right now we're very eager because the first floor is under construction, and it'll be done in a couple of months. But the entire first floor is going to be dedicated to the community. And the Houston GLBT Community Center has said that they'll be moving in, and I believe the political caucus as well. And then we have meeting space for other community organizations, and it'll be a permanent home for Hatch, a permanent home for the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. So the entire first floor is going to be dedicated to the community, and that's one of the reasons why we want to raise funds and retire our debt, is so that, you know, everything will be ready to go.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things is with all of this new going on, don't you fear that with the growth of the community, I mean, with MCC, that there's going to be, you're going to run out of space again? Isn't that a fear?
It might happen, but not in the near future. We've got several office spaces that are still vacant.
Okay,
so.
I just want to make sure, because it's a beautiful building. And anyone that hasn't been over there, you need to go by. And what's the address over there?
It's 401 Brannard Street, or Brannard. I don't know how it's pronounced.
Brannard.
That, I like that pronunciation.
It's the old Fitness Exchange location, and you know that building has history.
Well, seriously, though, I would love to give anybody a tour. So if they wanted to give me a call over at the Counseling Center, 713-529-0037, I'd be really happy to show them the new space and all the things that we're doing with it. It's really incredible. This new building is about three times the size of our old building. One of the great things about that is that in the past, we had our education department meeting off-site, we had outreach meeting off-site, and now we're under one roof. And how great is that to have everybody together?
That's wonderful.
Well, and also, it's such a good facility, and it's in a good location. You got plenty of parking.
Lots of parking.
Yeah, convenient parking.
And exactly.
And the parking's all fenced in so that it's safe and secure, and you can have events in the parking lot.
Exactly. The parking lot has afforded us, we've already held two events. We had one for National Night Out that was a hate crimes vigil. And then we also
I was there.
Right. And then we had another one for World AIDS Day.
And I was there.
Absolutely.
That was great.
So, but all of these things, like I said, coming up on Friday, March 14th, at John Danielson's home. I don't want to give out the address for that, but you can find the information at our website, which is www.montrosecounselingcenter.com. www.thepartyfest.org, and you can find more details about the party. It is $30 to attend, $25 for seniors. We do break that out because we know it might be a little bit more difficult for seniors to make ends meet. So $30. You can purchase tickets online through our website. We don't actually send out tickets, but we'll have a registration table with everybody. So going to our website, you can find out more details about that. And all of the money that we raise this year is going to go to the building.
And anybody that wants to donate more can.
Right. We're in the middle of our capital campaign. And one of the really great things with the capital campaign is that we have naming opportunities for the different rooms, whether it's on the community floor or whether it's a therapy room, the gay and lesbian switchboard, the hatch rooms, the giant meeting rooms. We'll have space for 12-step groups to meet on the first floor. So any of those rooms have naming opportunities, anywhere from $5,000 all the way up to $150,000. And those can be paid out over a five-year period. So if somebody wants to pay $1,000 a year for the next 5 years and commit to that to us, then we'll go ahead and name the room after that person.
Oh.
So back at our old facility, we had a couple rooms that were named after some individuals, and we carried those along with us. But already, thanks to... the Elliott Matthews Foundation. We have the Marion E. Coleman room dedicated to all the work that she's done in the community.
Mm-hmm.
There are several other rooms that have already been purchased, but there's still plenty more. And
plenty of rooms.
And coming up in May, we'll have a dedication.
How much is a small closet? I mean, I may be able to afford that.
We don't want you in the closet anymore, Jennifer.
Oh, it's too late. It's too late.
I don't think
the memorial closet, the Jennifer Memorial closet. Okay.
So
I've taken the tour. There's plenty of rooms to name and...
And it's gorgeous. I mean,
yes, and the view of downtown is awesome.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
Isn't it wonderful? So the facility is beautiful. I'd love to give tours. I would love, you know, if anybody wanted to come and just see what was going on. And also for the first floor, one of the things that I'm really excited about is, you know, when we deal with the counseling center, we're dealing with mental health issues, and people don't really go out and say, yay, I just had the really best therapist in the whole wide world, oh my gosh, you know, just got over a depression that's been debilitating. It's not the kind of thing that people go out and celebrate and cheer maybe privately, or they don't go out and say, yay, I just kicked, you know, a 7-year crystal meth habit because of the counseling center. There's so much stigma associated with the services people receive at Montrose Counseling Center, and they're confidential and safe and affirming. But people just generally, word of mouth isn't really our strong suit because people keep these things so private. So what we're hoping, too, is that as people access the first floor, that they'll see about some of the programs that we have at Montrose Counseling Center, and hopefully that'll reduce the stigma. They'll find out, you know, for example, we have a lesbian breast cancer support group. For lesbians only. They're dealing with different issues, not necessarily the kind of thing just a traditional breast cancer support group, dealing with your partner being a female instead of a male, a lot of those issues. Same thing with a prostate cancer support group that's gay men only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those men are dealing with different issues in terms of functionability after, mm-hmm. you know, surgery or, you know, chemo or whatever. And a lot of those are completely different than what somebody might traditionally in a regular prostate cancer support group. So chemical dependency, certainly, you know, a lot of people aren't aware of those services. We've got Hatch, we've got Spry, so many other different things. And if they're coming to the new building, hopefully they'll get to find out about so many of the things that we offer that it will reduce the stigma associated with receiving services.
And since they're coming for some other event or some other group to, you know, part of that organization, they're already there. They can access the information.
Right.
That's excellent.
And once they see it, like, I'm really personally looking forward to when the community center moves in, that they'll restart bingo, because I loved going to queer bingo.
Well, I know that you've called it the community's best kept secret.
Exactly. A lot of people aren't aware of all the services that we provide.
Here we are, getting the word out.
Exactly. Well, one of the first ways to find out, though, is to come and meet a lot of people that support the counseling center. And it's just 4 days away after tonight, coming up this Friday, at Bringing in the Green.
And again, it's donations. You know, you can buy tickets, but please, you know, donate, because this is the part of the capital fund.
Right, to the building fund.
The building fund to defray the costs of renovations mm-hmm. for the new building and
exactly.
to retire debt and all. That's
well,
great.
And we have a grant from Houston Endowment, and there's a portion of that grant that is matching. And so if we can raise $250,000 on our own, then Houston Endowment will give us another $250,000.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope y'all heard that
but
out there.
But we need to raise that before the end of May.
So remember that. Now, we just finished pitching for the station. Now we're pitching for the Montrose Council.
This is fundraising season this
year. Yes, everybody. Well,
we're all fundraising.
Yeah. Well,
all
yes.
But
we finished all the fundraising for the election. Now we start.
give.
AIDS walk.
I know. But, you know, and that's another way that we benefit from the community, because we've been selected from Jungle, you know, as a beneficiary this year, Bunnies as a beneficiary this year. And so, you know, some of those are opportunities to bring in some money to provide services, not necessarily for the building fund.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if anybody wanted to select us and choose the building fund, we would be extremely grateful.
Oh, yes. And again, some of the programs that are there, that I know Spry is one of them, which is one of my interests. I'm interested in, because that's really a new program, isn't it?
Well, it's about 2.5 years old. The funding on Spry ends at the end of September, so we're looking for sustainable funding for that. Not that I'm pitching for more money necessarily.
No, of course not.
It is a program that we do want to continue after the federal grant runs out. It's been incredibly successful. One of the things I think that we weren't really expecting is the amount of isolation that is out there among GLBT seniors. And so to be able to, and the new building will give us a chance too to have a place where seniors can congregate, where they can get together, where, you know, if we can get, say, like a big screen TV donated,
mm-hmm.
you know, they can have movie afternoons, movie nights, and just have a place where they can get together, have coffee, and just, you know, have some companionship with one another mm-hmm. instead of feeling so isolated, because a lot of seniors don't go to the bars anymore, they don't feel comfortable. You know, our community is very ageist in terms of, you know, once you get past a certain age, you know, you don't feel like you belong necessarily anymore. And so so it's a good opportunity for people to get together and meet one another and you know, not feeling so lonely.
And that's Seniors Preparing for Rainbow Year, Spry?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's a joint program that we're doing with Legacy. So I do want to mention that there are some services available through them as well. We have the anti-violence program, of course, which provides services to anybody that is the victim of a hate crime. They don't have to be a victim of a hate crime because it's a gay-related crime, or an anti-gay related crime, I should say. Anybody that's the target of a hate crime, whether it's race, religion, gender, anything, we're able to provide services. We can get somebody to the hospital if they need to get treatment right away, if they don't feel somebody's going to take them seriously to file a police report. Because if somebody uses a pejorative term while they're beating you up and calls you a name,
mm-hmm.
that can be considered a hate crime. And bullying in the schools, if you're being bullied in school, you can come and get some help. We can, you know, like I said, help file a police report. We can, you know, make sure you're treated with dignity and respect. If somebody is arrested for the hate crime, we can follow through the entire court system and court process. Then we also have a sexual assault program. If somebody in our community is sexually assaulted, we can do the same thing. And then with domestic violence, you know, it occurs in our community at the same rate it happens in the straight community. That's about 1 in every 4 couples has an incidence of an imbalance of power and control. And it's not necessarily physical violence. Sometimes it can be isolating somebody from their family, financial isolation, you know, emotional abuse, psychological abuse, spiritual abuse. There's all different kinds. And if somebody feels threatened in their home and they don't feel safe, and they're afraid because their partner beats them up, or something like that, or if they need to put a safety plan together, because most people, when they try to leave a domestic violence situation, chances are they're going to go back to their partner. In fact, studies show that most people go back up to 7 times before they're actually able to free themselves from their abusive partner. So we can get them anytime, call through the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. We can get them out of their home and into emergency housing for the night, and then we can help to arrange for transitional housing. So, which is pretty unheard of. I mean, there aren't a lot of domestic violence programs around that target the GLBT community.
I was going to say, this is really the first time. Now, I've talked to you many times here on the show, and I've heard of this before, but that's something that needs to be really promoted, mm-hmm. to let people know that, because that incidence is very real. And it's just as frightening to escape from that kind of home violence as any other group, other relationship.
And sometimes if you don't think that there's anywhere to turn, that means that you might either stay in and risk. I mean, studies show that without, you know, any kind of intervention or services, I mean, there's a possibility that you're in a life-threatening situation here. And so we want to make sure, because a lot of the domestic abuse programs follow a traditional model, and that is that the male is the abuser and the victim is the female. And so with that in mind, if a lesbian shows up at a traditional women's shelter and she's put in the shelter, her partner can follow her right in and claim to be, hey, I've been abused by my boyfriend, my husband, etc., and pretend, and that way she can get into the shelter and continue to harass and stalk and do all, you know, have access to
terrorize
her partner. There aren't very many places that a gay man is going to feel comfortable when it's called a women's shelter, although some of them do provide emergency housing. And there's no place where a transgender person can go and maintain their gender identity. And so what we do is we partner with some hotels, some boarding houses, and the person actually gets their own room until, you know, when they're fleeing a relationship. And I do want to mention also a couple of things. One, services are available regardless of immigration status. Two, we can arrange to have your pets put in a shelter when you flee. Because a lot of people won't leave an abusive relationship because they won't leave their pets. And
that's
a lot of shelters won't
take them. That's incredible insight, because I have heard of that before.
Exactly.
You know, what would I do? You know, okay. They don't even talk about their children. They talk about I don't know what I would do with the dog I can't leave the dog with.
The pets are usually the children.
Yeah, the pets are the
children. They are the children for many people. Yes, I know mine are.
Right. So you know, we realize that this is an area in the community that needs to be served. And so that's one of the many programs. We're dealing with so many quality of life issues. That's why, like Brian with a Y said, you know, that we are the best kept secret. Because when you hear Montrose Counseling Center, you think counseling.
You're not really aware or
cognizant to the vast programs that y'all have.
Well, and that, I mean, did you leave the house tonight thinking you might be the victim of a hate crime?
No,
I didn't.
No, I didn't.
I don't think anybody does.
No, you don't.
And so, you know, we want to make sure that people are aware of these services, you know, because, I mean, God forbid something would happen. And next month, April, is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we'll be talking a lot about sexual assault awareness at that time, because there's a lot of things in our community, such as, you know, getting consent. And what does consent mean when you're having a sexual encounter? Well, that means that your partner has to be sober. Your partner has to be of an age that he or she can give consent. You know, and so there are a lot of things that we'll be trying to get out in the month of April for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, to let people know, you know, that if you want to protect yourself, be careful, you know, and be sure to give and get consent. And not just before you engage in a round of sexual activity, but for each act. You know, I'm not saying you have to sign a contract, but, you know, is it okay if I do this? Yes, you know, I would love it if you did that. You know, I mean.
Understood.
So.
But let's go back to the reason you came on the show. I mean, not that this wasn't interesting and very informative. I found it got a lot out of what we've been talking about. But let's go back to the fundraiser that's coming up this Friday. Tell us about it again. Let's go back to the beginning.
Bringing in the Green at the home of John Danielson. His address may be found at our website at www.montrosecounselingcenter.org. there is a little banner you can click on, and you'll access the invitation, and then you can click through if you want to pay online. It's $30 to enter, $25 for seniors. Hors d'oeuvres, compliments of Dwayne Todd, an attorney here in the community.
Excellent.
And all the money raised will be going to our building fund.
Any green beverages or anything St. Patrick's Day?
I couldn't tell you that. I'm sure if you make a request to one of the bartenders, they'll do their best to accommodate you.
Okay.
Well, we've been talking to Sally Heffer at the Montrose Counseling Center with Brian with an I and Brian with a Y. I'm Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
Do, do, do. Static is raining on the radio. I am searching for a smile, so I turn the knobs and move along. Searching for a tune that makes my heart beat, shakes my spine, makes me move my feet, pick up my pace and hum a song. You are a classic butter keeper, always make me stronger when I'm weaker. Hey now, my boyfriend's back. Remember riding down the highway, holding your hand as you lean my way. A smile, a whistled melody. Your notes are etched into my brain. It don't matter what else the world sings. I just want perfect harmony. You are a classic butter keeper.
Boyfriend from his 2007 album Boyfriend and Other Slices of Love. Up next on Queer Voices, Nick Bryans. He's going to talk about Pride stuff and the 30th anniversary of Pride in Houston. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Well, we just changed the clock, so it's spring, which means summer's not too far away, and that is sort of the season for Pride. And Nick Bryans is with us, who's on the board, to give us sort of an update of what's going on in Pride this year.
Thank you, Jack. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent. Can you believe it is the 30th anniversary of Pride Houston this year? 30 years of Pride. I guess we're officially getting into our middle ages here in Houston, and we're starting to gear up for the big celebration in June. June might seem like a long way away, but for the volunteers who are working overtime preparing, it's not that far at all.
Well, and I understand that we're in the process of voting for Grand Marshals also.
Absolutely. We've got some dates coming up where the community can vote on who you would like to be your Grand Marshals for the 30th anniversary Pride Parade in Houston this year. You can vote. All of this information, of course, is on our website at pridehouston.org. But you can vote this Friday, March 14th, at Chances Bar. You can vote next Friday, March 21st, at JR's Bar and Grill. Or you can also vote this Saturday, March 15th, at the offices of Pride Houston at 1415 California Street. We've got some great nominees for Grand Marshal this year. Of course, we have four Grand Marshals each year. We have a male Grand Marshal, female Grand Marshal, an organizational Grand Marshal to honor one of our outstanding nonprofit organizations in the community, and an honorary Grand Marshal, which is usually somebody from the straight, quote-unquote straight community that we honor for their support.
Okay, and of course, one of our nominees is Jennifer Poole.
Yes, Jennifer is one of our nominees. We have a great, great slate of female nominees. Jennifer Poole, Julie Eberly, Christina Martinez, and Kelly McCann all are nominated for female Grand Marshal. For male Grand Marshal, everybody's favorite photographer, Dalton DeHart, is on the list, as is Mark Cohen and Keith Napier. Also nominated.
Okay. And that is a great honor, as I served that last year, which was a lot of fun. It was so much fun to be on that float going down the street there and seeing all those people there. Just a great, great honor. We've had some great Grand Marshals in the past, and it really is an honor to be part of that. So, and then there's going to be an announcement party.
Absolutely. If you are interested in finding out who the who receives the honor of Grand Marshal, we will be announcing those on March 24th. At Cafe Adobe there at Shepherd and Westheimer, and that will be at 7 p.m. We'll have some food, and everybody can have a margarita, and we will announce the winners for the Grand Marshal. And those will be the individuals who will represent our organization and the community all throughout the month of June, and of course, ride the position of honor at the very front of the Pride Parade.
And you have a meeting coming up tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow is our next meeting, 7 p.m. at the offices of Pride Houston. Anybody who is interested in getting more involved, or if you'd like to use it as an opportunity to meet some people or really help us plan out a fantastic celebration for the 30th anniversary, certainly encourage you to come. Another event that we have, which is this Wednesday, we're going to have a happy hour for our Friends of Pride. The Friends of Pride is our financial support group. These are individuals from the community who make contributions to ensure that we have the resources to put on our Pride events. And Salud, which is located on Montrose Boulevard, will be hosting that event for us from 6 to 9 p.m. If you have been a friend of Pride in the past, or if you would like to sign up this year, we encourage you to come to the happy hour, have some drinks, meet some of the volunteers from Pride Houston, hear about what we're doing for the 30th anniversary, and sign up for your package of benefits this year. As you know, those who sign up to be a friend of Pride receive things like VIP seating during the Pride Parade. They get extra special attention in terms of communications from our organization, and they get a great little pin that they can wear to show off their support of our organization during all of the Pride events.
So what is going to be different this year? I mean, besides being the 30th anniversary, is there going to be any difference between the parade and the festival?
One of the things that's going to look very different is the festival is changing formats a bit this year. We heard a lot of feedback from our community last year when we were looking at the structure of the parade and the location of the parade. It was overwhelmingly decided by the community to stay in our location of Westheimer for the parade. For the festival, we're going to try to incorporate more of the festival along the parade route. So instead of having a separate area where you would pay an entry fee, it will be pieces of the festival spread out on some of the streets along the parade route. You'll still see a lot of elements of the festival. You'll see stages. You'll see the health tent, the community health tent. You will see a Pride history tent, some educational areas, a children's play area. But they won't be all fenced off in one area that you pay to get into. It will be something that anybody along the parade route can enjoy, kind of during that tailgating time, we call it, for when people line up before the parade begins. People love to start lining up some before noon, and the parade, of course, doesn't even kick off until 8:45 p.m. So people like to come out early and enjoy the day and celebrate their pride, and we're going to have activities for them to do that.
Will there also be the community tent area, or is that going to be different?
There will still be opportunities for organizations to have areas along the many of them will be grouped together, but they won't all be in one specific space. They'll be spread out a little bit more. We think it will allow for more people to have access. And of course, we won't be charging an admission fee this year for those activities. So it'll be free to anybody who comes out for the parade.
Has any of the entertainment been announced yet?
Not yet. We are still finalizing our entertainment for this year, and some of the surprises, some of it we're keeping under our hat too for surprises for the 30th anniversary. But yes, be looking for some of those announcements to be coming out soon in terms of who will be entertaining us, and also some new things that we're doing along the parade route and in conjunction with the parade to make sure that the parade is really our focal point, and it's the bedrock of the Pride celebration. We want to make sure that the parade is really special and spectacular for the 30th anniversary.
So how can you encourage volunteers to get involved in this event since it's so large?
The very best way is we want to meet you. If you're interested in learning more about Pride, if you have an opinion, if you have a skill that you think would be useful to us, and regardless of your skill, whether it's writing or event planning, or if you're great with numbers, or if you're somebody who just likes to talk, we definitely have a position for you within Pride Houston. You can go to our website, pridehouston.org, or stop by the Pride offices at 1415 California Street, or just give us a call at 713-529-6979. We'll be happy to find a place for you. And it goes in very good this year with our theme for our 30th anniversary. We've decided that our theme is going to be We Are Family. We wanted to do something that was kind of fun and also a little nod to our 30th anniversary because we did start in the 70s. Also, this is a rebuilding year for us, kind of, in terms of there was some division last year when we were looking at the parade perhaps moving to a different location in Houston. With the theme of We Are Family, what our intent is really is to remind everybody that as a community, we are one big family. We want to come together to show off the size and the strength and the diversity that makes up our community for the 30th anniversary. So if you're interested in being a volunteer, come join our family. We'd love to have you.
That's a Fabu theme. I love that.
I think it'll be fun. I can already start to envision what some of the floats are going to look like.
And the costumes, too.
Yes, costumes, floats, festival booths. I think everything will be very fun under that theme.
Was last year the first year that it had rained? I think that
We've had some rain issues in the past. Last year was certainly one of the scarier years. Yeah. We have never had to cancel the parade because of rain. And last year, once again, it rained a lot during the day. Certainly affected our festival, but I'll be darned if right there at...
I know, it was amazing.
Right at dusk when it was time.
Clouds parted.
They parted, a rainbow appeared, and Mother Nature smiled upon us. So hopefully, since we had our rain year last year, I think it's going to be 70 degrees, slightly breezy, nice and sunny.
No rain on any community events this
in
year.
June of Houston. It'll be hot. It will probably be rainy
be
or at least humid.
90,
but
yeah.
You know what? It's your chance to wear your short shorts and your tank tops, show off, and have a good time and really stand up and be counted. To me, what Pride is a chance for us to say who we are and to see who makes up our community and to show all of Houston and Texas what our community is. I think that's the most important reason that we do this event.
It's amazing. I mean, the people that... I mean, 150,000 in the past.
Yes, yes.
That's like the city of Beaumont at the corner of Montrose and Westheimer.
The number that we always see is that we are the largest gay and lesbian event in the Southwest. Not the largest Pride event, the largest gay and lesbian event in general.
Bigger than Dallas. Right?
Oh, yeah, we're way bigger than Dallas.
And that's all that counts.
And we have lots of guests that come from all over Texas. It is not unusual for us to book up hotel rooms with guests from Austin and Dallas and San Antonio. And even outside of Texas, we have a number of people that fly in from the West Coast and Middle America, so to speak, to see our Pride event, and it's big.
We're the gay beacon.
Exactly. And I love that we really can... With Houston being the fourth largest city, it's really important for us to have an opportunity both for those in our community to learn about what organizations are available and to really get a picture of what our community looks like. And for people that are not part of the gay and lesbian community, it's a great way to see the size that we are and to show that we deserve respect and that we're just like any other part of the city of Houston.
Well, to me, it's always kind of a history lesson because people ask, well, why are you having this in June? You know, why have Pride in June? And you're like, oh, well... This is why.
Yes. So. Many people don't realize that Pride is in honor of Stonewall, which was the start of the modern gay rights movement. And for many people that grew up a few decades ago, there was a time when you could be arrested for going into a gay bar. It wasn't that many years ago you could be arrested for having sex with your same-sex partner in the state of Texas. We've come a long way, but that doesn't mean that there aren't reasons that our community should get together to celebrate, whether it's to show off who we are or to learn from one another and network. It's the one time a year where every segment of our community comes out, whether you're men, women, transgendered, all the organizations, young, old, black, white, and it's a chance to really see who makes up our community.
It's amazing to see the different segments.
So are applications available yet to be in the festival and or the parade?
Absolutely. Of course, our website, pridehouston.org, is where you can get all the information, one-stop shop, whether you want to volunteer, if you're an organization that would like to have a parade entry, you should definitely get your applications in. Start thinking about what you want to do with the We Are Family theme.
Oh, my gosh.
Have
the
fun
possibilities.
With it.
Oh, my God.
And same with if you're interested in having a booth along the parade route or an entry in the parade route. If you have another spectacular idea, I know we were just contacted by an organization recently that wants to do a parent-child dance. The Houston Gay and Lesbian Parents want to partner with us because many times they don't get to go to the father-son or father-daughter or mother-son dances at their schools. So if you are an organization or an individual that has a unique idea that we should incorporate to really make our 30th anniversary spectacular for Pride, please call us, email us, visit our website. We would love to hear from you.
And the date of the parade this year?
Last Saturday of June is always the parade date. That's the easiest way to remember it. 26th, and it's the parade.
28th.
The 28th of June. And just remember last Saturday of June, and the parade always starts, kicks off at 8:45 p.m. down Lower Westheimer, starts at Woodhead, rolls all the way past Montrose and all the way down to Stanford. So block your calendar, start thinking about what you want to do. There'll be many other events throughout the month of June to recognize Pride, some educational, some political, some artistic. But check our calendar of events on Pride Houston. You'll hear more from us as we get closer to June. But we want people to come out and participate in these events so that they can really learn and be counted. That's the point of this.
So for more information, you can go to pridehouston.org. There's a meeting tomorrow evening at 1415 California, which is a Pride office. And coming up, there's a Friends of Pride happy hour at Salute. How's that pronounced?
Salute.
Salute.
It's a wine bar on Montrose.
Montrose, right near the bridge, not too far from the overpass. It's the underpass now.
That's true.
They changed it. And then on Monday, March 24th, is a Grand Marshal announcement at Cafe Adobe. And like I said, you can get some more information at pridehouston.org. Nick Bryant is on the board of directors, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
Let me sing and catch my breath. You're not staying.
CD titled Red Haired Girl.
That's Horse and the track I Can't Break My Heart. This is Queer Voices. Well, Brian, it was a beautiful Sunday, wasn't it? The weather was just gorgeous.
It was amazing. It was, you know, just the people were out. Everyone had their team shirts on. The sun was shining.
We're talking, of course, about the AIDS walk. And Gary Greer is here to talk with us about that, too. And your tan. Where's your tan? You were out in the sun, right?
No, I was under the registration tent.
Oh, I see. That's why no tan.
For most of the day, so I didn't get a full tan, maybe on the back of my neck.
I got the redneck tan, you know, the little
Oh, you
red
do?
I
you
know,
do.
I don't. I know. It's,
yeah, go ahead and take the rest of it off.
Kinda,
no.
It's kind of sexy for the, you know, the redneck.
Yeah. Right. So this is the 19th year of the AIDS Walk? Is this something like that?
It was. It's the 19th AIDS Walk in Houston. You know, it tells you how far we've come. When it first started, it was called the From All Walks of Life, because there was such stigma about the AIDS, and then we just wanted to come right out, and it's called the AIDS Walk. And so AIDS Walk is going to have the most successful year ever. The mayor was there, of course, as the marshal, and he announced to the group that this is the first time that Houston will reach that $1 million goal we've had out there. And so we're expecting to be $1 million walk, which is something quite
great. Only Houston could do something like that.
Well, unfortunately, we've been a little bit behind some of the other cities, even some smaller cities than Houston, and this has been just a goal that we've really wanted to reach for the AIDS Walk the last few years. It's been slowly pushing up, so now we can stand with the best cities.
Stand proud and raise money like the rest of the cities.
Now, Gary, what are you going to do with all that money?
Oh, well, all the money goes to, it stays right here in Houston, Glenn, and the listeners out there for 19 different partner agencies, and of course the host agency's AIDS Foundation Houston, of which I'm a staff member. But it'll go back into the community for education, services, prevention services, primary health care, housing, and all for Houston area individuals to support HIV and AIDS education and primary care, and of course client services.
So there are a number of different agencies that are kind of tied in with this.
Absolutely. Well, you have the Baylor International Pediatric AIDS Initiative, which is hosted in here in Houston, but of course they go to places like Africa and bring medication to children who are affected with HIV and AIDS, and they bring some of the training here to Houston and work on a medical component. But you have some of the standard community-based organizations like Bering Omega Community Center Services, of course. The Center for AIDS, this is one of their largest fundraisers.
I have to give a shout-out. I'm a board member, and they are the number one team once again. So, just so you know, they pull in the money every year.
They do a fantastic job raising, and it gets to be a little bit of a competition.
It's very competitive. I was over at the office, and they're just gung-ho. They're planning sessions, and their kickoff party, and just lining people up to walk for AIDS Walk.
They have an amazing story where a 12-year-old boy, about 4 or 5 years ago, did this for his bar mitzvah project, and each year he's been since then he's been the top fundraiser, individual fundraiser, and really helped the team.
The secret weapon of the CFA.
Wow, okay. Yeah. So tell me more about some of the kinds of projects that the AIDS Walk funds, like specifically the training or education.
Well, it fills in a lot of the gaps that you might not have available on federal funding, so it allows us to do innovative initiatives like, for instance, at AIDS Foundation Houston, we do Project Wall Talk, which is a prison inside the prison, Texas prison system, to do peer education, and then we take those and have conferences across the all across the state, and helps link people who are HIV positive coming at risk from, and you know, coming from the prison system, help them reconnect into services and to health care and prevention education, secondary prevention education, as they try to reestablish those ties and get back into employment. So that's one example, but there's a variety of examples. For instance, you have the spay neutering assistance program. That's just a SNAP program.
Yeah.
Which is you know, a lot of HIV-positive individuals who have a lower income, maybe they are disabled, you know, their pets provide them with a lot of support and comfort, and this offers free or low-cost pet services to those individuals. And, you know, they don't have a government fund for that, so this is something that really helps them
It really does
with their operating procedures. Yeah.
And as well as education, you mentioned something else. There are other projects as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, at for instance, the AIDS Foundation Houston, there are 12 different housing programs that we operate, and there are different costs that are not available through government grants, that, you know, transportation cost or cost to help a homeless family establish permanent housing with maybe some starter kits and things like that, that the AIDS Wall can help leverage. And actually, a donation through the AIDS Wall can help a lot of these partner agencies leverage their money to bring in more money from the government or from grant, because it provides a leverage, and you're matching what you might get from a grant.
I have to admit my ignorance here. The last time that I really thought about this sort of stuff was when I heard something about Ryan White funding. Is that still an issue?
Well, Ryan White funding is at risk. I mean, we had a reauthorization, and it's been changed somewhat. But, of course, it's a political... it's a fund that comes up for reauthorization 2 years from now. And it'll be, I'm sure, a hotbed topic of whether it should be fully funded or what type of services should be funded. So you can expect some perhaps narrowing of funding for those kind of services that were formerly provided by the Ryan White Fund.
You know, one thing I noticed at the AIDS Walk is that it really reaches out to outside of the GLBT community. I saw a lot of student groups, sororities, fraternities, different service organizations that, you know, non-traditional, that are out there walking and supporting AIDS Walk.
I think that's a great point, because, you know, it affects everybody, and you have this great presence from the GLBT community, and our mayor embraced that.
I love that. Oh,
a very flamboyant starting. We had a great warm-up by Elliot Perez, and his brother Ernest Perez was my aerobics instructor when I first came to Houston, and he was open about his HIV status. Unfortunately, he passed away. It's been a number of years now, and he always started the AIDS Walk with a warm-up, and now his brothers kept it going, and it was just wonderful and fun and campy, and the mayor said, hey, let's all do it. And, you know, the kids loved it, the families loved it, the corporate sponsors were there, and it just kind of embraces our community. I really appreciate that.
I really like being at Sam Houston Park. It's very picturesque, and you're kind of there in the park, and you see the skyline, and you're walking down Allen Parkway, and then you're walking back, and you see all the buildings, and it's, you know, you see this river of people in different colored shirts. It's very, very picturesque.
And the shirts might say Bering Community Services. It might say ExxonMobil. And then you've got middle school, high school. You've got fraternities. Continental Airlines was a big team. Of course, the name sponsor is Chase. And they
Chevron.
Chevron.
Oh, yes.
And Chase Bank was there with big numbers. They were former sponsors.
And the Pride Band is there playing the music on the sidelines. And then you're getting the water. It's just, you know, it's...
And other years they had some, like, health food or something to start off with.
Well, there was organic pecan station. They were handing out pecans.
Okay.
At the very end, you're like, oh, I need this.
Well, HEB was there, and then Cliff Bars and a few other nutrition providers. Of course, there's Starbucks, because I got there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they were there.
And there was a bunch of radio stations, like, along the road. You know, it was fun. It was, like, different points along the way that had different... interests.
Actually, I kind of messed that up. Chevron did produce $100,000 to help really kind of get the AIDS Walk going this year, and so they were the name sponsor.
And how long have you been involved with it personally, Gary?
This is my 13th year, lucky 13. So this is the 13th year that I've walked.
13, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And other people who want to get involved in something like this. What's coming up in the year, and how can people get involved?
Well, they can still stay involved. Even though we had the event Sunday, you can still participate, and it's very, very simple. You can just go to www.AIDSWalkHouston.org, and there is a website which explains this year's event and what happened, and you'll see on there that the ticker's slowly moving up to that $1 million mark. You can kind of make it happen. You can give your donation.
Yeah,
you can make
a
$10 donation online. You can do it in 5 minutes.
The fun thing is setting up your web page and doing your own walk page, and then watching it as the donations come in, and watching your own personal ticker go up, and being part of a team and seeing that go up. Like, I would check it every day. I'm kind of a geek, though, so I'm always checking the internet website. But to watch the big thermometer go up.
I got obsessed with it. Yeah. This little thermometer, and I wanted to make the little thermometer blow off the top.
It was kind of slow in the beginning, and then like in the last month, it just accelerated.
Are there any other big events coming up this year?
Well, yes.
I'm sure there must be.
Well, there's plenty of events.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Easter weekend's got the Bunnies on the Bayou and the BCBC's Jungle, which both support a number of these agencies that we've already mentioned, and also some of the programs at AIDS Foundation Houston, and those are great events.
We're supporting the AIDS Foundation Houston Stone Soup Program. That's BCBC.
Okay.
And then you've got Lone Star Volleyball Association is sponsoring Stone Soup as well, which desperately can use that money.
Now, let's talk about Lone Star for just a moment, since we're right up against that one. That's Easter weekend, a volleyball tournament to raise money for Stone Soup.
We have, I understand there's 46 teams from all around the country, from New York, Madison, Wisconsin, of course, Dallas. Big competition with Dallas.
They're going to
jump in here and some of our sponsors are the Charles Armstrong Properties. I think there's going to be Meteor. It might be the registration site. And, you know, then it's a great time to show off Houston for the GLBT community. You have a lot of people coming into town for these different events. They can go to volleyball, then go to the party at the jungle parties, and then everybody can end up at the Bunnies on the Bayou, which is a spectacular event. I love it.
And, of course, you don't have to be a volleyball player to get some enjoyment out of this, because there's always the volleyball widows who are looking for something to do while their other halves are playing volleyball.
Is that the short guys on the side that can't
mm-hmm.
play?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a fun time because, I mean, you have all these good-looking, athletic young men.
Right, right. And that's March.
And then myself, of course.
March 22nd and
23rd. Fit that category at all.
Easter weekend is early this year. March 22nd
that's right,
and 23rd
is
Easter Sunday.
That's right.
So get ready.
So it's actually coming up. That event is coming up in 2 weeks' time.
Everything is in 2 weeks, let me tell you.
Yes, it is. Gary Greer, thank you so much for joining us to talk about AIDS Walk Houston and how successful it was this year.
Well, thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Brian.
What's going on for anything for the 20th, or have you all thought about that, for the 20th anniversary AIDS Walk?
Well, the 20th anniversary,
you're going to have to get, like, Richard Simmons or Elton John or somebody, you know.
Oh, yeah, both.
That'd be crazy. Oh, there
you go. Get both. You know, you mentioned Julie Eberle.
Can't say that yet.
She was up for the Pride Honor Marshal, and she was the development chairman for AIDS Foundation. Houston just brought a lot of energy to the AIDS Walk.
Julie is, energy glow. Oh, man.
So something to look forward to for next year.
We'll come up with some. We've got to get a secret weapon.
Right.
You are listening to Queer Voices. today alone. That is Phil Dutra, and that's from his album Right Behind the Rain from 2007. And by the way, we played Horse going into that last interview. She is going to be the featured artist on J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage coming up in 2 weeks' time at the end of the month. And Brian, you have an announcement.
Yeah, we have another AIDS benefit coming up this weekend, and it's going to be benefiting the People with AIDS Holiday Charities Working Fund. It's at the Ripcord at the corner of Fairview and Crocker. It's Bondage Bunnies. On Friday night, they're
Bondage Bunnies?
Bondage Bunnies.
Okay.
On Friday night at 10 p.m., there's going to be a daddy auction, and on Saturday, the 15th, there is going to be a boy auction. So come on out on those nights and bid on your daddy or your boy.
All right, and I guess the guys in the studio are going to talk about politics next.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, I guess that last announcement goes right into politics, doesn't
That's
it?
That's right. Bondage boys and whatever. Bunnies, I guess, with a leash.
Well, we had a rather interesting election.
We certainly did, and it's in many ways, it's still being argued now a week later. The news is still talking about it. There's some things that are settled. People still arguing about how it was handled, the caucuses. The so many thousands of people came out that were unexpected, and there just wasn't the manpower to handle it. This was a remarkable election, which filled with a lot of new things that people weren't expecting.
I will break you of saying manpower, staff power.
Yes.
yes, it was rather interesting, and certainly some of those results didn't come out till late in the morning, in the next day, actually. But I don't think they've actually given an official count of delegates from Texas yet.
No, they haven't. I've been looking. If they have, we need to know. Send us an email. Let us know that if we missed it.
Because I guess they're still counting or figuring out how they're all proportioned. But it does look like that it might very well be, even though that Hillary Clinton came out with a higher popular count, that Barack Obama may actually get more delegates from Texas.
Did we have a final count? I haven't seen the final. Last count I saw, she was about 100,000 votes ahead of Barack Obama.
Yeah, I think that was in the paper. You know, it's all a blur now after everything else that's been going on. But, you know, we had a lot of interesting races, local races, that countywide, some state district reps, and that was all pretty interesting.
Well, that, and also there's a runoff. People don't, you know, if you weren't paying attention, you might miss this. There's a runoff coming up on April 8th. With one statewide race for railroad commission, and then another runoff in the judicial
for
the 80th
right.
Civil District Court.
On the Democratic side and on the Republican side, there's a runoff for U.S. Congressional District 22 and the DA's office.
Exactly.
And I'm not sure if there's any other ones.
It seems like there's another one.
I think there's also a runoff in the Pasadena area for, Constable or...
it may be Constable. Constable, was it five?
I don't know.
Well, there are three runoffs in Harris County that we need to look at. We apologize for not being so much on top of it, but that's just the way it is. Sometimes it was so confusing. The main thing for you to remember is that there is a runoff in both the Republican and the Democratic primaries coming up on April 8th is the official. That is a Tuesday. And the week before, that's the March 31st through the 4th, is early voting.
So we'll keep you up to date on that, because, like I said, talking about early voting, there's only going to be 5 days of early voting from what we know at this point. And, officially, or from the current numbers, Clinton got 1,459,000
1,814 votes, and Obama got 1,358,758. It's 51% to 47%, and they see, and this is going by CNN, it looks like in the delegate count, Obama got 56% of the delegates, but it's only showing 41% reporting. So they're still not complete yet.
They're still counting.
They're still counting, yes.
Well, you know, so maybe by the convention they'll have it together.
Ben, if you're interested in getting involved, you can go to info@thecaucus.org or go to thecaucus.org and sign up on the website of getting involved with the political caucus. Tomorrow, I understand that Dr. Richard Murray is going to be speaking at the Stonewall meeting.
Yes, I saw an announcement to that effect.
I believe that is at Ziggy's Healthy Grill.
Yes.
Which is at Alabama and Greenbrier, and I think it starts at 7, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's what I saw in there. Also, Dr. Richard Murray is going to be on one of the upcoming shows here, so we'll be able to ask him questions about the election and its effect. He'll be able to give us some background information on the statistics, which is always very interesting. So you can look forward to hearing from him in the near future.
Oh, and then speaking of voting, we'll mention this one more time. Voting for Grand Marshal continues this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Pride office at 1415 California. There's two other locations. You can go to PrideHouston.org, and of course, I won't be secretive on this vote. I'm definitely voting for Jennifer.
Can I electioneer or something?
Yes,
while I'm here?
Yes.
Please come out and vote for me. I would be very, very honored to represent our community as Grand Marshal in the Pride Parade. I really would. You know, I love this community, and it's return that love. And so please, come out and vote. This Saturday is between,
11 a.m. and 1 p.m.
1 p.m. And aren't there some other times?
There's a couple bar locations. You can go to PrideHouston.org. I believe one's at Chance's and one's at JR's. And it is a pretty... It's very easy. It doesn't take that long. You won't be waiting in line, believe me. And you actually get to vote for first, second, and third choice so that there's an instant runoff the way they got it set up. And it's very easy to do. And all you have to be is a resident of Harris or surrounding counties, and you can vote.
All right. And thank you. I'd appreciate your vote.
And we have Joan Devlin on the line now from Iowa with a guest. Joan, you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey,
Glenn,
Joan.
Anna.
Did you guys get some snow?
No, actually, we're getting up into the high 30s lately, so the snow's actually melting.
I did my best to send all that snow to you, but, you know.
Yeah. I heard that they got some in Dallas, which was pretty interesting.
Surprisingly, the Sam Houston statue that's north of Houston, they actually had pictures of that on the news with it snowing at the Sam Houston statue.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah, my friend said it was bad there, though, because they don't have the equipment to deal with it.
Exactly.
So, actually, we didn't have it here either because we ran out of salt. We had so much snow this year, so I got to drive to work and back on an ice rink for a while there.
Wow. So what's your topic tonight, Joan?
Yes, my topic tonight is I'm talking to Mark Simpson, who is one of the organizers and the main organizer, actually, of Bewitched Fanfare 08. Mark, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, Mark, well, tell us what delightfully delicious things you have planned for the Bewitched Fanfare this year, because this is very different.
It's going to take place in Burbank, California, from June 25th through the 28th. And the first three nights are going to be at the Victory Theater Center in Burbank. We got a lot going on. I have a lot of work to do, and I still have a lot of planning to do, but... we're going to have episode screenings. We're going to have a night of tributes to Elizabeth Montgomery and William Asher. And we're going to follow that with the feature Johnny Cool, which is the movie that they were working on when they met. We're going to have some special guests, and I'm still working on booking these people, so I can't really give any names right now. But
well, we can talk about something special you're doing, though. You are going to have a little bit of a presentation on the history of the Burbank Ranch.
Misha Hoff, who runs one of the Bewitched websites, He's going to be doing that. He's done a lot of research, and I mean, this is a project of his that he's been working on for a few years. So I just thought it would be kind of cool for him to do some sort of a presentation at the fanfare, and especially seeing that we're going to be visiting the ranch, which we always do when we're in Los Angeles. So I just thought it'd be kind of neat for him to kind of give everybody kind of a history lesson on the history of the Burbank Ranch, which was what's owned by Warner Brothers now, but it was Columbia's backlot, and it's been around since, I want to say, the 30s, and a lot of famous movies and television shows were filmed there, and so that's going to be kind of an interesting thing, and he's got a lot of neat photos and just a lot of really cool information on that, so I'm looking forward to that.
And this has been a good year for you, huh, with the Elizabeth Montgomery Star Ceremony kicking the year off and now the Bewitched Fanfare?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on this year. So this is kind of the year of Bewitched, I think. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited. It's a lot of work, but it's fun and it's very rewarding for me.
Well, I wanted to talk to you because you and I have been doing these conventions since before they were really conventions. They used to just mostly be a gathering of a few fans at someone's home,
right.
And you were kind of the one that sat down and decided to kind of take it to the next level and make it more formal, make it have a little bit more to do with the show than just a bunch of fans getting together and meeting each other and kind of watching the episodes. And what was it that kind of prompted you to do that?
Well, I'm not really sure. As a matter of fact, I'm, you know, very surprised that I'm able to pull this stuff off, because I never would have dreamed that I'd ever be doing anything like this. But I've just always loved the show ever since I was probably about 5 or 6 years old, and the show and itself and Elizabeth Montgomery as well. And I've seen, you know, all the attention that's been given to shows like Star Trek and I Love Lucy with, you know, with their conventions, and I just kind of felt like it just deserved a little bit more attention. And with my website, you know, I've been contacted by people from all over the world, and it amazes me. And I mean, it has a huge following, and even, you know, 45 years after its original premiere, I mean, it's still, you know, it's still in reruns, it's being released on DVD. I mean, new generations of people are, you know, watching the show and you know, feeling a real connection with it, just, you know, like we did. And it's a great thing to see. And I just really felt like, as I said, it just deserved, you know, more recognition than it has been given. And I mean, the people that put this show together, the actors and the crew, I mean, these people were just phenomenal. And I just think that, you know, it just deserves more attention, and I'm finding that, you know, a lot of people agree with me.
Now, you do have a limited number of tickets for this year's fanfare because it is being held at the Victory Theater in Burbank.
Right.
So what can people do if they want to get on board and attend the convention?
Well, the easy thing to do is to contact me for details, and I can be emailed at bewitchedcollector@yahoo.com. If you want details on the fanfare itself, I'm in the process right now of working on the website, and I've got a little bit of stuff up there. In fact, I just kind of put it up this morning, or got it going over the weekend, and kind of, you know, let everybody know that it was online this morning. But I'm, you know, trying to get stuff up there as quickly as possible. And right now, the easiest way to access the website is to go to my website, and there's a link on the homepage, and it will take you right to it, because the web address is kind of, it's a tripod, and it's kind of a long, complicated link. So if you
go to your website,
www.thebewitchedcollector.com, all one word. It's right there on the front page. I have a the YouTube promo, and I have kind of a like a flyer that gives a little bit of details, but right under that there's a link to the website. And within the next couple of days, there's going to be a lot of information up there as to what we're doing, the events, and you know, the special guests, and just about everything, and plus you know, the information as to how to contact me and get registered. And like you said, we do have a limited number of seats available in the theater. We have, the theater holds 91 people, so I'm hoping that we can fill it to capacity. So, you know, I just hope that people get in touch with me and get registered.
And let's talk too a little bit, because Bewitched, as we've discussed before on the show, there is a, you know, the convention obviously is open to all, but the show does have a huge gay following and a huge sensibility.
Right.
And I think that it was especially amazing to find out, as we've all found out in recent days, that Elizabeth Montgomery had very many gay friends and was a huge, huge supporter of gay civil rights causes.
Right.
And it's just interesting, because that is probably, you know, I joke around that when people ask me all the time, well, are all these Bewitched fans gay? And I always laugh and say, well, no, but a lot of them really are, because Bewitched is to speak to gay people more so, even, I would say, than some of the shows that are specifically targeted to gay audiences.
Uh-huh.
And why do you think that is?
I'm not quite sure I understand your question.
Why do you think, even years later, you know, we have Will and Grace now.
Oh,
we have
you
the
mean why
so many gay people?
Gay people kind of drawn to the show.
Yes.
Is that, well, I think, and we've talked about this before. I think that it's not really a gay show, but I think that gay people can relate to the situation with Samantha. She's a witch, but you know, she's kind of in the closet, so to speak, because if she were to reveal herself as a witch, then you know, there would be some real repercussions with that, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of gay people don't come out because they're afraid of, you know, how people are going to react, or, you know, how it's going to affect their life. And it's unfortunate. But, you know, and plus, we've discovered that a lot of the actors on the show are gay, and, I think that, you know, this is what, just kind of, you know, underneath it all, I just think that we can all relate to that in a way.
Well, Mark, give our audience one more time the information. They will need to get to your website and register for the convention. The conventions are a blast. I speak as one who's been to every single one of them. I'm proud to say that. And
this one
is very, very much looking forward to this one.
This one is going to be amazing. I can't even tell you. But, yeah, the easiest way is to either contact me at bewitchedcollector@yahoo.com or, and I forgot to mention this one before, the actual fanfare email address is bewitchedfanfare, that's F-A-R-E, bewitchedfanfare@AOL.com. And that's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me.
Well, great. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight. I can't wait to see you in June. It'll be so much fun. Kiss the children for me. Mark has two little doggies, Samantha and Endora.
Yes.
So do kiss the children for me.
I will.
And kiss Endora with tongue, just joking.
I'll leave that for you.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks for talking to me.
You're listening to 90.1 KPFT-FM Houston.
Thank you, Joan. Joan Devlin is a regular correspondent for Queer Voices. She actually used to live here in Houston and was part of the regular team here on in the studio on the microphone, and when she moved to Iowa, we managed to keep that connection alive, and Joan does interviews over the phone now.
Well, so, I want to make a quick correction. We at Queer Voices, when we make a mistake, we jump right in there. Of course, the more people called instantly when we made that mistake to correct us. The Stonewall Democrats meeting tomorrow night is at Papa's Barbecue. That's 7001 Southwest Freeway.
7007. I'm sorry, you can't read.
Oh, is that? I can't read your right. We made a mistake. 7007.
Yes.
Southwest Freeway.
We had said Ziggy's. That's not correct. Papa's Barbecue.
It's Papa's Barbecue, and that's the Stonewall Democrats meeting with Dr. Richard Murray tomorrow night.
We want to thank all of our guests tonight.
Yes.
Which is...
Sally Huffer.
Sally Huffer, yes. And
Nick Brines from the Pride Committee.
And
Gary Greer from AIDS Foundation Houston and AIDS Walk.
Yes.
And Joan's wonderful interview.
Absolutely. This is Jennifer Renee.
Jack Valinsky.
Brian with a Y.
Glenn Holt.
Brian with an I, Erickson.
And this is Queer Voices. Good night.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valinsky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valinsky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Award-winning, best-selling author Jim Hightower is described as America's most popular populist. He's releasing his book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, live and in person at Landmark River Oaks Theater in a benefit for KPFT on Wednesday, March 19th at 7 p.m. To purchase tickets, visit kpft.org or call us at 713-526-4000. Prices are $10 in advance, $15 at the door, $5 for students with photo ID. Also, if you'd like a chance to speak with Jim personally, $150 will get you entrance to a private meet-and-greet event with Jim running from 6 to 7 p.m. just before the evening's activities, and that includes an autographed book, appetizers, and preferred seating at the book reading. River Oaks Theater is wheelchair accessible. This event is a fundraiser for KPFT Houston. Y'all come.
In 1971, a courageous group of veterans exposed the criminal nature of the Vietnam War in an event called Winter Soldier. This month, members of Iraq Veterans Against the War will give first-person accounts of what is really happening day in and day out on the ground. The events will bring together veterans from across the country to testify about their experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan and present video and photographic evidence of war crimes they have witnessed. In addition, there will be panels of scholars, veterans, journalists, and other specialists to give context to the testimony. Join KPFT at noon from March 24th through 28th for a special series of open journals. Pacifica Radio will provide coverage of the historic Winter Soldier event. Again, tune in March 24th through 28th, noon to 1.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.